I'm Larry Killip, and I'm coming to you from Auckland, New Zealand, this windy December day, 2019. I'm a songwriter, performer, studio producer, classic car restorer, and classic photography enthusiast. Now, when it comes to New Zealand music history, though, I have someone with me here today that is very special in that regard. As a 17-year-old schoolgirl, she debuted on New Zealand television in 1972 with one of her own compositions and instantly made her mark. Then in the space of just 1 year, she'd had two original songs peak at number 4 on the New Zealand charts and was voted Best New Artist and Recording Artist of the Year in the Rata Awards. What an amazing start to an event-filled career as an artist and songwriter, with 11 albums, I think, that's including two compilations and about 21 single releases to date. Here in my studio today to talk about all this and more is the wonderful Shona Lang. Shona, welcome to this podcast.
Thank you, Larry. It's lovely to be here. There's a fireman burning.
Right, where will we start? Well, I'm just going to let this chat roll along. This won't be a list of definitive career successes, although we will mention some and play some of the songs along the way. If you want a broader overview of Shona's career, just search Shona Lang, L-A-I-N-G, on Wikipedia or similar. Your very first song was a hit, 1905. When did you start writing your own songs?
I think I was probably about 10 when I wrote my first song, but that was kind of an impression, you know, like a bit of mimicry.
Yeah.
So I guess 14, 15, I started really, really writing my own things.
That's amazing. So that's probably about, what are we looking at there, 1968, 69 sort of thing, maybe?
Yeah, yeah. My dad travelled to the States, and when I was very small, brought a stack of singles back. So I think even at the early age of like 5, I was already kind of besotted with rock and roll.
And were you picking up the guitar?
Ukuleles to start.
Right.
Yeah, got my first guitar at 10.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know about you, but when I got mine, there was absolutely nobody to show me what to do with it. It seemed to take forever to, you know, pick up on it.
Yeah, I had a couple of friends who were from musical families. Like, my family were into music, but they weren't players. And then I had a few lessons from a man who lived in Petone in Wellington, with the surname Brazier, of all names. No relation, I don't think, to Graham. But
You know, you got onto a television program when you were 17. Were you already signed to the record company before that?
No, I did a demo tape at high school, actually, with one of the music teachers there. And it was not of either of those songs, but then was sort of called into audition. But by the time we'd recorded 1905, and You Are The One was the first song in the Heats, by the time it went to air, I was, yes, signed, sealed and delivered to Phonogram, Polygram, as it was at the time. Yeah. 1905, you won your battle with life. The turn was mine, 50 years later. So it's no use crying. Time obviously didn't even want me to stop trying. Time to stop myself from using it the way I do. But in this day and age, reality can be a dream too. So I'll spend my spare time and my taken time working out the truth. Yeah, I suppose I've got the time for you.
Yeah, well, that must have been pretty exciting, I guess, so
It was very exciting.
You know, to just for it all to suddenly, it's fairy story almost. You learn the guitar, you write a few songs, and then next thing you know, you're signed to a record company, then you're on TV, and you're only 17, you know.
Yeah, yeah, perhaps a little young even.
Yes, but I noticed by your output, single-wise, and albums, I should say, that once you started, you pretty well were rocking on for a few years there.
Yeah. Songwriting has been a thing for me.
Yes.
Still is, really.
Yep. So with that instant success, your parents, how did they react? Was that all a bit, whoa, you know, we knew she wanted to sing and play the guitar, but now she's, you know.
Yeah. That's an interesting question, really. I'm not sure my mum was ever that comfortable with it. I think she shied away a little from the limelight, but I think Dad got a kick out of it.
Okay, yeah. Well, that's good.
Yeah. Youngest in the family, so I don't think it was that good for my, you know. I got ribbed a bit by the older brothers and sisters.
Oh, okay, yeah, because, you know, we've got to remember when it was too, you know, in the very early 70s, you know, life was very different. Expectations from parents were different.
Absolutely.
It was the way it was, yes.
But then I was always a bit odd.
Well, you had to be different in some way to have got where you did so fast. It's, you know, it's incredibly impressing, really. And then, of course, we have Show Your Love. Was that a single too, was it?
Yeah, that was on the same album, Whispering Afraid. That was entered into Studio One, which was the songwriting hall. Have you ever seen how a touch makes people pull away and to smile?
Was that with Christopher Bourne? Do you remember that?
That's right, yep, Chris Bourne, yep. Who I saw not that long ago.
Well, I haven't seen him for years, but the funny thing was that years after Studio One, I had my twin boys, they were only like 5 or 6, and they were going to school up the road. And they came home one day and said, oh, one of the teachers knows you. And it turned out to be Chris Bourne. Yeah.
Really? So, I didn't know he taught.
Bit of a surprise.
It was in Nelson where I think he
okay.
lives down there.
And of course, in those days with New Zealand television, you know, there was one channel, and
yes.
you know, you had a pretty good chance of a lot of people seeing you. And
I think 1 million people sat down to watch that yes. first night. I mean, that just wouldn't happen these
crazy.
Days, would it? Never get 1 million people doing anything at once.
No. It's amazing, really. All right, so that's how you kicked off, and you stayed in New Zealand through the latter 70s? Or you went...
No, I went to London in April 75.
Oh, that explains it then, yeah, why there's a bit of a gap there, yeah, okay. And did you stay there pretty much until you were working with Manfred Mann's Earth Band?
That's right, yeah. I went to do an album in London. I'd met an Italian man called Roberto Danova, at a song festival in Tokyo, and he was sort of keen to get me to London, and so I went to London, and we recorded an album that actually tracks are only
oh,
now
right,
coming
that's
out.
That's what that one is from, yeah, okay.
Yeah. On the new compilation, I think there are about half a dozen songs off that album, and they're interesting. My voice is a stranger to me. But the band, my God.
Oh, yes, of course, you're in the right place for that, you know.
Thank you.
was it meeting that producer that kicked it in, or because how did you meet Manfred Mann's Earth Band and those guys, you know?
Well, that came a bit later. So 76 I did that album, and then there was an option on the deal because I was still signed to Phonogram, I think it was, by that stage in New Zealand, and an option came up, and all the advice over there was to say no, so that album was never actually released. I took off and did a bit of travelling, went overland to Kathmandu, small thing, and then when I came back, the sort of things end and other things begin, and I was introduced to a guy called Chips Chipperfield, who became my manager, and from there I was signed to EMI, and I did an album called Tied to the Tracks in 1979-1980, yep. Which had a single off it, Don't Tell Me, which was A-listed Radio 1. Played for 6 weeks, five times a day.
Oh, wow, that's great.
Yeah, but the EMI factory, in true British style of the times, was on strike.
Yes.
So wasn't a single record in the shops. And in those days, it took having singles in the shops to have a hit. So. Manfred heard that record on the radio and sort of got in touch with Chips, thinking I think that my voice was not dissimilar to Chris Thompson, and Chris was about to head off and try his hand with the Night, the band that he had with Billy Christian, and he took off to the States for those 2 years I was with Manfred, and I kind of filled in.
Oh, so you were fronting vocals?
Yeah.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
I didn't realise that, yeah. And you were just singing what Chris had done, whatever hits they had up to that point, I guess. And
well, we weren't working live. We were recording an album called Somewhere in Africa.
Okay.
So it was kind of like a full-time job, though.
Yeah,
5 days a week.
Okay.
9 to 6.
Yeah, wow. Yeah.
First time I'd worked like that, which was a bit of an education.
Yeah, it would be.
But it was a really good education. I wouldn't have missed that for the world.
No, of course you wouldn't. Yes. What an experience, you know. And I must check that album out, actually, and have a good listen to it sometime.
It's pretty good. Mm. I mean, and it's his one and only, really, political album, because he is South African.
Okay.
And it was a lot about South Africa. There's a great song on it called Details.
Okay.
Written by one of the guys that wrote The Voice, you know, the...
Yes. Yep.
The song
The Voice, yep.
Yeah.
Johnny Farnham did. But I've heard Chris do it, yeah.
Yeah.
Or did Chris write it, maybe?
No, I can't remember the guy's name. I've had a terrible memory day today.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
But he was a South African guy, and it was about the identity card, give details. So one whole side of that album was quite specifically South African politics.
Okay. So that was, just to recap that was Manfred Mann's Earth Band, and the album was...
Somewhere in Africa.
Somewhere in Africa. Okay, everybody, we must check that. All right, so...
It was the sort of the dawn of the electronic age, really, and Manfred was a whiz at arpeggiated keyboards.
Okay.
So there's a lot of that sort of sequencing stuff on it. It's a great, great sound.
And is that where, if I may say... You were doing some arpeggiated sort of things too, weren't you?
Like, yeah. I was hooked.
Yes.
Totally. I mean, I was very much an observer, production-wise, when I was working with Manfred. But when I came home, I was, chomping at the bit to get my hands on whatever I could. I was just talking to someone about the JX3P, which had an internal 16-bar sequencer. And I wrote a lot of songs, including Kennedy and Drive Baby Drive.
Wow.
On that 16-bar sequence. It was good discipline for a songwriter,
yes,
but in the end became a bit of a hindrance.
Well, I remember when you came in to the studio, Echo Park, back then.
Yeah.
And here you were. You brought in all the synths. I remember them all around the floor, all yeah. hooked up. Yeah. I was amazed. You know, I was like, wow.
Yeah. Yeah, they were good backing tracks, actually.
Yes.
You know. That was a tour with the Narcs, strangely enough.
Yes, right. Mm. But to hear them all going at the same time, all talking to each other and doing their thing.
Yeah.
I was doing MIDI then myself, but nothing like that, not on that scale, you know. I was busy on an Atari computer mucking around.
Yeah, know. Well, I was using the Atari too. I think we had that in common, Creator software.
Oh, right, that's
and then,
right.
Yep. And then you couldn't get an Atari serviced, so.
Yes.
It was a dead end to that little bit of technology.
I've still got two of them upstairs. Just couldn't let them go.
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's wonderful. So you do that, and you're in England, you're in studios, you're with some fairly well-known and very good musicians. It all comes to an end. What happens then?
Well, I came home on a return ticket, actually, but my dad wasn't that well, and I was in a relationship, and just sort of seemed like a good idea to stay. New Zealand seemed so fresh and sunny and open and
yes.
warm and beautiful.
Yes, I remember that too. I did a stint in 73 in the UK for about 15 months and it was great, but coming home you could see for miles. You
yeah,
know?
Yeah.
you
the know? Clouds seemed in a different place.
Yes.
yeah, no, so, and it took a while, you know, to get anything happening. It was 1984. When I started to do the genre album,
right,
which was sort of financed by the film industry of all things.
Okay, yep.
Back in the days where there were nice big fat tax rebates for people who invested in movies.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
So
so you did that in New Zealand.
Yeah.
Yep.
At Mandrill with right. Bruce Lynch.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So that was the beginning of working with Bruce, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. I was just listening to that America song today. I had a quick look, and. It's a good clip, isn't it? Video clip.
Yeah, it's a bit scary these days. I'm kind of reluctant to sing it. But,
oh, right.
Someone walked out of a gig the other day.
Oh, right, yes. Well,
there are Americans everywhere.
Yes, well, you were getting on that train, if you like, with following through later on with Glad I'm Not a Kennedy and then hitting the Cold War with Soviet Snow, you know.
yeah, it's where I live.
But they're great tracks, you know, and... I don't want to jump too far ahead, though, but so it looks like you've gone into the album South not long after genre then. It's sort of followed on almost.
Yeah, 85, I think, genre was released. Kennedy was released as a single, but it was ignored.
Right.
Until it was a hit in Australia in 1988.
Oh, okay.
87, 88.
Isn't that funny? Yeah, that happens, doesn't it?
And that was sort of hard on the heels came Soviets. And I think we'd already recorded South by that stage. So the album South that was released in Australia was a compilation of genre and South. So there were sort of different permutations of those two records.
Right. And then, of course, we come to the big one, Glad I'm Not a Kennedy.
Mm.
It's amazing, really, you know, that I always loved that line, wearing their fame like a loaded gun.
Well, I learnt something recently, you know, that wearing the fame was not an original line. James K. Baxter used that.
Right.
Like, he didn't use it, he said it. But I think I heard, you know, the guy from Graham from Dunedin talking about James K. as wearing the fame, but I think he... It was like an old overcoat or something.
Yeah, okay.
Rather than a loaded gun.
Yes. Oh, no, it's a great line. I mean, sometimes these things come in similar times, you know, from different sources too. It's how it works, you know.
Yeah.
And
But I was just sort of talking about the fact that my parents were in the States in 1960 and actually saw him campaigning.
Okay, yeah.
Saw him in the flesh. So that was, it was actually something that was talked about in the family, you know, like I was only very small.
Right, yeah.
And then when he was assassinated in 63, that was also sort of really, I mean, it was a big deal for everyone.
No, but I appreciate that if it's in your life, you know, that's right. You've got it right in front of you and you feel it, you know. Wow.
Yeah, so I guess that's sort of where that song came from in the long term.
Yep.
Living on through politics, bodyguard. Blue-eyed honesty, indigo, indigo.
right to live out our lives.
And the speeches, I think that was Bruce's idea, actually, to put the speeches in.
Sure.
But and we discovered that anything written by an employee of the American government doesn't have copyright.
Oh, okay. That's a good one.
Yeah, obviously because they want it to be dispersed.
Yes,
you know,
yes.
They want people to hear as much of it as possible.
Yeah, it? That is an amazing song, actually. And
well, thank you.
And quite a sort of a bit of a test for everyone, but I think everybody embraced it in the end, but it could have been like, oh dear.
yeah, it could have. It was a bit of a novelty song in lots of ways. Strange too that it sort of followed on from 1905, which was a sort of love song to Henry Fonda. It was a bit of a session with famous Americans.
Oh, okay. I have to tell you that my absolute favourite of all time is Soviet Snow.
Well, thank you. It's kind of my favourite too.
Yeah, it's a. I think that is a stunning song. It really is. You know, it's the way you resolve it too, and just the idea of it is just amazing.
One.
Lightly political, and you get away with it, you know.
Well, I sort of feel like I grew up with political songs. You know, a lot of American music in the 70s, early 70s, was at least socially conscious. You
know,
like,
yes.
They were songs about things rather than just boy meets girl, girl meets boy, heart gets broken.
Of course, yeah.
I came from a sort of tradition of...
Yeah, well, that's great. I mean, I doubt that I would have thought, you know, therein lies the difference. I wouldn't have thought of that at the time as a songwriting subject, you know. That wouldn't have happened. But you did it, and it's just amazing.
Thank you.
So,
I keep doing it, don't you, unfortunately?
Yes. And, you know, did Bruce do the production on that too?
No, that was Stephen McCurdy.
Yes, I knew Steve, yeah.
Yeah, we went in, did 6 weeks solid craziness.
Oh, wow.
We had one rule, and that was no rules.
Yeah. That's great. Okay.
Although we did waste a lot of time going through the ridiculous number of snare samples.
Oh, yeah.
We spent whole days going, no, not that one, no, not that one, no, not that one, no, not that one.
Everybody does that, yeah. Well, not everybody does that, but if you ever make it, you've got to have done that once somewhere.
Yes, I think so.
Okay, well, that's...
He had an emulator too, like...
Right, yes, I remember it, yep.
Yeah, I think Bruce had the first emulator in New Zealand and set the stage.
Yeah. Was Stephen Wellington?
No, he was up here.
He was up here. Mm-hmm. I remember he used to come into the studio sometimes. I do remember him, yep.
Yeah.
He did a fine job, I'll say that, yep.
I think Graham Mirror definitely deserves some credit for both of those records.
Okay,
as well.
Yeah.
And the Shona album, which came after New on Earth.
Okay.
And New on Earth, he was the engineer on New on Earth, the New Zealand half of New on Earth.
Right, okay. So I'm not familiar with Fear of Falling. I like the title, though. It sounds great.
Well, that's also a political song. It's a song about Lockerbie.
Oh, okay. Oh, well.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Nice, easygoing subject.
And Thief to Silver.
Thief to Silver was a song of unrequited love that I wrote in London.
Okay, yep.
I wrote that and Mercy of Love, both of them at night when I was recording New on Earth. It was kind of an interesting situation to be recording six songs at the townhouse, Battersea townhouse. And then I'd come home at night and pick up the guitar and work on these two songs.
Right.
Which ended up being on the second half of the project.
Right. So then we have, obviously, because I know already that you've done two songs recently, but we seem to have a gap then between the 90s and now. It's the way it just looks on paper. What happened to you?
Well, I did an album called Past the Whisper in about 10 years ago, 2006.
Okay.
A bit more than 10 years ago. Yeah, at the Boat Shed in Tauranga.
Right.
With the Kokomo guys. Very acoustic.
Okay.
Sort of purist acoustic. And a lot of the band members were from Mahinarangi Toka's band. Denny and Jimmy Young, who was a pipe player and a Bowron player. And James Wilkinson, who's a rather astonishing guitar player. And Nigel playing bass. So they were. It was very acoustic.
Well, that sounds like a good listen. We'll have to check that out too.
Yeah, it's a nice record. It's a gentle record, perhaps. Mm. You know, out of character in terms of how sweet it is, perhaps.
Yeah, okay. All right, so... But as I just previously said, we have these two new songs which are going to join the other batch of songs that have never been released into a new album, and that will be soon. Whenever you're listening to this podcast, it could even be now.
Yeah.
So, you know, just have a look for it.
Time travel.
Is there a title for that album yet, do you know?
No, we haven't come up with a title yet.
Oh, well, we'll
just... I was thinking Once More with Feeling.
Right? Oh, okay. Once More with Feeling. Yes. Why not? Good one. Oh, that's lovely. So we'll play samples of these two new songs, Mahatma and Mahatma's Army, sorry, and remind me of the title of the second song.
Vagrant Heart.
Vagrant Heart, which is a lovely, lovely song too, you know. Both of those appeal to me immediately, but that has a lovely depth, that Vagrant Heart. It really does, you know.
Oh, thank you. It's a kind of rock-bottom kind of song, really.
It is. Yeah, yeah. No, it's great.
So I think a lot of good songs come from that place.
I want to be in the Mahatma's army. I am a soldier of peace. I am a soldier of peace, said Mahatma Gandhi. I wanna be in the Mahatma's army. Peopleless one, everywhere, taken to the streets and to the city square, banding together for the big love of love. Shoulder to shoulder, body heat, in the midst of one breath, one belief, love is as love does. An easy silence is understood. The gathering is for the greater good. Banding together for the big love of love. She's shadow in the candlelight. Oh, the wonder of this quiet night. Love is as love does. I am a soldier of peace. I am a soldier of peace, said Mahatma Gandhi. I wanna be in the Mahatma's army. I am a soldier of peace. I am a soldier of peace, said Mahatma Gandhi.
And so really, there's not a lot else to say. You're going to carry on, obviously. You'll do some more music, I guess. You'll do some more songs.
Yeah, I guess so. I'm sort of looking forward to my 65th birthday with glee.
Yes, I bet you
but
are.
But I might... I'm not sure how to what degree I will retire, but the idea that I won't have to be out there.
Yes, yes.
It's kind of appealing.
Yes.
But then it will probably bring on a great wave of creativity.
You might find that, actually, that tends to happen when you don't have to do things.
Yeah.
It's a better way to do it.
And I live surrounded by guitars, so
right.
There's always one to pick up.
Yeah. Well, that's been fantastic, Shona. I really appreciate you coming in and doing this.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Larry. Thank you very much.
No, it's lovely. So,
and it's been great working with you too, I must say that.
Yeah. Well,
thank you for your help with these new tracks.
Yeah, it's fantastic. So, no, I'd love to see them move forward. I can't wait, really, just to get them out.
Hmm.
And, we'll see what happens from there. Well, thank you, Shona.
Thank you, Larry. All the best.
Move along, oh vagrant heart. You've overstayed again. Perhaps a return beyond the tall trees to the crags and the cairns. As a child I hissed such disrespect. Round Druid's town. Now should I follow the stones from Land's End to where I can lay this disinheritance down? A circus of freaks, Fugees and nomads, that foreign feral band. As a child I hissed such disrespect all around Druid's town. Now should I follow the stones from Land's End?
In this podcast, you have been listening to an informal chat with New Zealand songwriter-artist Shona Lang. I'm Larry Killip, and I have more podcasts in a similar vein. Just search Larry Killip Podcast. That's KILLIP. My website is larrykillip.com. Thanks for listening.